Today with Dr. K, I'm Dr. KY's Whitehead. Folks, we are here just having a conversation about how we can go forward, looking to move our conversation along to the next level of discussion. Before we do that, I want to go back to Crystal. Give her an opportunity to finish up. Crystal, you were talking about your son. Can you let us know how he's doing and then where you stand on taking the COVID-19 vaccine?
Yeah, I do want to make it clear. We're not anti all vaccines. What we are is we are pro adequately informed consent. And that's kind of the major problem, is that the adequate information isn't being fed to patients. The actual patients should have the opportunity to read the original studies for themselves in full. But mostly what we do is we take, snidbits that are in medical journals or what doctors say and repeat, instead of actually reading the information ourselves. Most of the times the doctors will throw away the little pamphlets that go into the boxes with the injections. And I think those absolutely should be provided to the patients to take home.
Okay.
Regarding this specific vaccine, most vaccines don't, like the placebo in the trials themselves, they're not true placebos. A true placebo would be sugar water, but that's not what they, involve. They still involve the heavy metal, which is the, combining agent, whether it's aluminum or mercury, whatever. But a true placebo
Now, Crystal, I'm sorry, I need to just step in here because I know we've had a lot of epidemiologists and infectious disease specialists. So I was just wondering, with what happened to your son, will you and your son take the vaccine?
We did get it finally reported to the VIR system after pushing and arguing and actually refusing to leave the hospital until they put it
good.
In the system.
Good.
Regarding this vaccine, we won't be taking it.
You won't
However,
be taking
we
it.
Do not condemn everybody that does. I do think that, not everybody does have neurological symptoms.
Okay.
But to have that adequate, so that way you can actually make an informed decision, I think is the right of everybody.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you, Crystal. Crystal, new caller from Baltimore. Folks, I want to have Denise Jones-Dorsey and Garrett Good join the conversation to talk a little bit about Share Baltimore Incorporated, which is turning renters into homeowners. We're at a point right now where so many people, due to COVID-19, are in danger of losing their apartments, losing the homes that they're renting. And we need to think about how do you become a homeowner and begin to build up your family income and equity. Denise Jones-Dorsey is the chair of Share Baltimore Incorporated, and Garrett Good is the president and CEO of the Northeast Housing Initiative Incorporated. How are you, Denise and Garrett?
Good afternoon, Dr. K. I'm well. And yourself?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much. So, Denise, I'll start with you. Can you talk to us about Share Baltimore? How did this come about?
Absolutely. Dr. K, Share Baltimore Incorporated is a collaboration of CLTs that are around the city. Those CLTs is the Charm City Land Trust, located at McElderry Park and Broadway East, the Harbor West Collaborative, which is in Cherry Hill and Westport, the Northeast Housing Initiative along the Bel Air Road Corridor, Remington near Johns Hopkins University, and the South Baltimore Community Land Trust in the Curtis Bay area. We all came together to figure out how to share our back office functions in such a way as to reduce our overhead so that we could pass on those savings to the homeowners who would be moving into the homes that we are building. We also came together because we recognized the need to advocate for affordability through community control of land, resulting in a shared equity strategy.
Now let me just ask you before I go on to Garrett, because during this time of COVID-19, people are really struggling. Are you finding that folks are able to participate in this program? I know it's no money down and monthly payments as low as $600 a month. Has COVID-19 impacted people's ability to even qualify to be a part of this program?
I want to answer that question in two ways. The first one is this activity, because it's not a program. We are a corporation. We're a business doing housing, is absolutely essential. And COVID-19 has raised that concern for us because people who are currently living in rental properties, they are no longer safe and secure in their homes. If you have a community land trust home, one of the things that you will find, not only do you create wealth, but you become safe and secure. I will yield to Garrick to share with you how folks are able to participate in the purchasing of the home in spite of COVID-19.
So, Garrick, thank you so much, which is a great segue to pull you in and talk about, you know, with the Northeast Housing Initiative Incorporated, how are people able to qualify? What's the assistance that's available to even walk through the process?
Well, we actually have, through our stewardship program, a concierge report approach, if you will, where we actually work with families one-on-one to assist them with housing counseling, to understand what their situation is, as well as to be able to just identify if there are any issues on a case-by-case basis. We work with, in partnership with Bel Air Community, Bel Air Edison Partners, to be able to determine how to best assist families, as well as identify any program, other programs that be able to assist them on the path towards homeownership.
So with that in mind, and I'll come back to you, Denise, because I'm reading through this, and my producer, we were just so excited to hear about what is happening to give people some protection. Can you talk about the importance of home ownership to build the generational wealth that some families will need?
Absolutely. And I have to begin, unfortunately, with a negative. Since the inception of this nation, land is directly related to power. So since the beginning, 40 acres and a mule, redlining, there has been a concerted structural effort to discourage African Americans from owning a home, because those people who understand home ownership understand it has everything to do with power, including electoral and economic power. What this program does, Dr. K, is simply this. We are interested, I'm saying program, what this business does is simply this. We are interested in serving individuals in this market who are at 30% area median income to 50% area median income. What does that mean in layman's terms?
Right.
If you are earning $15 an hour, which many of our healthcare people just secured, that means in a year's time you're earning $31,200. With good credit, to go get a mortgage, you would get a mortgage that would provide you a house at about $90,000. Good luck. Where can you find a safe, decent, affordable home in this market for $90,000? What we're interested in doing through the shared equity strategy is to provide you with that home. Now, the home may actually show on the HUD-1 at $145,000. However, through a strategy of stacking subsidies, we're able to get you into that house somewhere between $90,000 and $70,000. What does that all mean? That means that in time, you are now a homeowner developing equity in your home that you can pass on to your family members. Now, this is what's so key. So let me talk about rental for a
moment. That's what I was going to ask you.
Here's the reality. In this market, on the average, people pay $1,376 per month plus utilities. So that means in a year's time, a household will pay in rent $16,512.
That's mortgage money.
You got it. And in 10 years, you have paid $165,120.
Wow.
Lack of opportunity to own a home traps the family in a cycle of material poverty. Our goal is to reverse that strategy. For those people who are interested in buying a house through this shared equity model, we want you to have your home. And that's how you reverse the racial wealth gap in our community.
That's what you hit on something that we talk a lot about. Own your land and your home. Make sure you're buying both of them so that you can build your wealth. Garrick, I want to bring you back in here because I know that part of the work, or maybe the main focus of the work for the Northeast Housing Initiative, is dealing with permanently affordable housing. You're a developer here. And so in doing that, what suggestions would you give to people who are saying, look, I hear Denise, you're singing my song, and I want to be able to buy a home and really begin to change my life? What are two or three things you would tell them to do first?
I would tell them to contact our office and let us shepherd them through the process to look at ways to, well, first to know exactly what they need to do to qualify and be eligible for the permanently affordable home ownership model that we have, as well as identify any barriers that may prevent them from getting there and how we've come up with a strategy to work them along the process to be able to get where they need to be. It's something that could be done in most cases over a couple of months, and we could identify which were the best training programs that are in place through some of our partners that they could take to be able to remedy any things they would have that would be deficiencies in them being eligible for home ownership. But there's, in my experience to date, there's been no one that would be totally ineligible. It's just a matter of what are the steps you need to take. And no two cases are alike. So the person would need to contact our office and figure out how we can start them on the process.
Let me ask you, Denise, well, what if a person is sitting here saying, look, my credit's a mess. I mean, it's so bad, I'm not sure how to dig myself out of the hole. What would you say to encourage them, Denise?
Oh, very simple. First of all, I want to emphasize that tonight I'm representing Cher Baltimore, and there are community land trusts throughout this city. Those land trusts, if an individual goes to them and says, ask the question you just asked, Dr. K., we would say to them, guys, get into a housing counseling program right now. By the time your credit score is remedied, your house will also be ready.
Mm.
In addition to that, we would say to those individuals, do it, don't procrastinate, do it now. Because many times, what folks think is an onerous, horrible credit blight really is easy to remedy. And the reason why we will want you to do the credit counseling is because that makes you eligible for the subsidies that we want to stack onto your mortgage to write down the cost of your mortgage to you.
Now let me ask you this. Garrick, I'll come to you. Now, the other thing I know people have been talking about a lot during COVID-19 is that this is a great time to refinance. Okay, so I have a home. I want to pay less money. I want to be able to spend more with the little bit I have. What would you recommend to people right now if they have a home and they're trying to figure out how they can kind of get a maximum amount of money being pulled out of their home?
We could connect them with our banking partners, PNC Bank and Fulton Bank, and have them engage in a discussion with them to see exactly what, if there is an opportunity for them to take advantage of the lower interest rates as well as a refinance model. We don't immediately have any programs in place that we actually facilitate with that, but I'm sure our banking partners do, and we'd be glad to help assist with that.
Now, we have a number of people, Denise and Garrick, who are calling, so I want to open up the phone lines if that's okay with you, because people are very interested. 410-319-8888. We have Clarence on the phone. Clarence, how are you?
Oh, Dr. K, I don't want to throw anybody in the loop, but I'm just interested. I know your guests represent different interests, but maybe one of them could tell us that what law, if they know, or regulation says that me, the city of Baltimore, who owns a property, cannot renovate that property and turn it over to a Section 8 recipient to collect the money that it cost me to renovate that house and then just give ownership to that person.
All right. Thank you so much, Clarence. So, Denise, I'll come to you. I've heard programs similar to this before. Like one, I heard Mary Pat Clark talk about a program where you can buy a home for a dollar. and then do the renovations. Is there something in place that says that Baltimore City can't just buy up the houses and actually give them to people who are currently temporarily experiencing homelessness?
Dr. Kay and Clarence, that's an excellent question. Let me try to give you as simple an answer as possible. There exists in Baltimore now, as a result of the community effort led by Ms. Bernadine Kimball, called the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. That commission is looking at various strategies to address the concerns that Clarence just raised. Now, regarding Section 8, the federal government has allowed for Section 8 recipients to be able to purchase their homes. Unfortunately, Section 8 occupants are not told about this opportunity, so I'm hoping folks who are listening to this program today will begin to ask their manager, tell me more about this program and how I can apply for that program.
Let's be clear. So if someone is Section 8, there's a program in place that can assist them in buying the home that they're living in.
Absolutely. So they need to speak with their manager at the Housing Authority of Baltimore City to learn the details about that programming.
Now, let me ask you this, Garrick. The program that we're talking about here, that we're laying out on the table, is this only for buying a home in the city? France Jamaica wants to know that. Or does this include the county as well?
Right now, we do have only inventory in the city.
Okay.
Maybe in 2021, we will have some properties that we're looking at beyond the city. But right now, our footprint is limited to the city of Baltimore.
And let me be clear, Dr. K. Again, this is not a government program. Mm-hmm. This is community people.
Okay, I like that.
Looked at this issue and said, we've got enough intel, intellect, gifts, and passion to solve the problem of home ownership in our community. So our brothers and sisters who live in the surrounding counties, they certainly can create a community land trust in their neighborhood, and I can pledge Share Baltimore would be happy to help you begin to do that work. There is enabling legislation that was created in the General Assembly in 2000. Frederick, Maryland, for instance, has a community land trust. So it's about the will of the community. This is not coming from any Department of Housing. This is coming from the community, how to address home ownership.
Let me ask you this, because Cynthia Gross on Facebook Live said, can you clarify how people can gain in and tap into the equity of a permanent affordable home? Are there programs in place to help people tap into their equity?
Garrick, would you like to respond, or would you like for me to respond?
You can respond if you wish. I don't have a direct answer.
Okay. So let me just try to keep this as simple as possible for your person. When you own a home in a community land trust, you share the equity with the trust.
Okay.
At a specified time in your mortgage agreement, it will share with you when you can tap into that equity. And so, yes, a person will be able to tap into their equity at an agreed-upon time to do what it is that they need to do. But the key here is, and what we're finding across the nation, people usually stay in their homes about 10 years, and then they sell the home back to the trust because they then want to move to the next level of housing.
Okay.
We also found that when the housing market fell in during the early Obama years, that across the nation, only 1% of the people who lived in community land trust homes defaulted. So we have a strong stewardship program that helps the persons who live there develop capital, become financially literate, and begin to amass significant wealth to do the things that family wants to do.
Okay, let me get some more callers in here. We have Pam on the phone. Pam's a new caller from Baltimore. Pam, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay. I have a question in reference to, I live in HUD housing, and eventually I want to own my own home. So I listened to you stating that if you have credit issues or any type of issues that you can come in, but I just don't know where to start to come in at. I didn't hear the beginning of the program. So.
Okay, Pam, thank you for your question. So you live in HUD housing. You want to do, Pam, and to begin with is identify the program that is funding the house that you're living in. Okay. That's key. So that when you go to housing counseling and all you need to do is go online, Google housing counseling. You can even put in the geographic area, and it will show you all of the housing counseling programs that are in and around your address. And let me just share this with you. You also can contact your bank or your credit union, because most of the housing counseling programs are funded with grants provided by area banks and the credit unions.
Okay.
All right, good. Thank you so much, Pam. We have Fred on the phone. Yes, absolutely. We have Fred on the phone from East Baltimore. Fred, how are you?
How are you, Dr. K? And hello to your guests. Just wanted to say this is a great program you're bringing to the table. You know, I was talking to some people about something similar to this a couple of years back. Community that I live in, it's comprised of about 1,500 units. 900 of those units belong to owner-occupied.
Mm.
We're talking about maybe about $45 million for assets. I was telling some people in the community, maybe we could get together, take our deeds to the bank, get us some contractors, and buy our own community.
Mm.
That's what we need. I tried to join your program. I couldn't get on for some reason. You can't get into it. But I'd like to catch up with you guys later and talk to our community association about some of the things you're talking about. This land trust, 48% of all the housing in Baltimore City is owned or occupied by somebody black in this city. Black people own a lot of real estate in this town.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we can use this land trust scenario, as you said, we can always control the community. The community buy back its own vacant properties, rehab them, and give it, sell it to the kids. That is a great idea. I want to thank you, I can't think of your name, for being there.
Yeah. And you know what, Fred? Don't hang up, because what we'll do is I'll ask Justina to give you the number to Share Baltimore, if that's okay, Denise.
Absolutely.
Okay, good. We'll make sure we get that number. Before we go, Denise Jones, Dorsey, and Garrett Good. Denise, I have one final question for you. Is Baltimore a good market to buy in right now?
Baltimore is going to be a better market to buy in. And what I want to make sure that your listeners know, Dr. K, is many times because it's African-American, we think the glass is half empty. Trust me, this glass is half full. And there are for-profit and non-profit developers chomping at the bit to gain access to this land.
Wow.
So what I would urge your listeners to do is that you definitely need to sign into the Affordable Housing Trust Commission meeting this Tuesday, December the 15th. If you go to HCD's website, they have the log-in information. The things that we want to do needs to be presented to that commission every time they meet. One other thing, Dr. K, that I want to leave with your listeners. The mayor indicated that he wanted to address the ills of our city, and I applaud that. The data shows that when a community is 51% homeowner occupied,
There you go.
The negatives in the community begin to diminish geometrically.
Well, let me ask you this, Denise and Garrett. I know you were on for a half hour. We have so many people calling. Would you mind staying over the break? Just giving us about 15 more minutes is all I'm asking for.
Dr. K, Denise is thrilled to be able to accommodate.
All right, Denise, hold on. Garrett, hold on. Folks, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we will answer your questions. You're texting me, Facebooking me, calling me. We'll get them all on the table before we end. Keep it here. Dr. K, I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. I am still joined by Denise Jones Dorsey. Did I get that right, sister? Denny's. Okay. Because I want to make sure I got this correct. And Garrett, good. I think I'm okay with you, Garrett.
Yes, you are.
So people are texting me. They're calling. Let me start reading them off. So the first one says, and I'll go to you, Denise. I have a texter who wants to know, how does he line up for the more expensive homes at a foreclosure price? That he's seen the homes of some of the work there, but they seem to pull the best ones or the more expensive ones off the market. Is part of the work you're doing dealing with foreclosures as well?
I'm going to yield to Garrett, because what that question is really about is site acquisition. And we are acquiring sites in a different way.
So thank you. We do work with some foreclosures, and we do mostly with the in partnership with the city or the REO process. And so we get the prices so we can get them at the cheapest price, so that there isn't a markup and so that we can keep them deeply affordable for families. I think your caller's question is how to align with those.
Right.
We do have special arrangements with banks. We have, and we have other institutions that we work with that make properties available to organizations like ours at the price before they go to the public market. So we're able to get in and get them before they actually become available to the public, to ensure that we are making them permanently affordable.
Okay.
So the key is, Dr. K, for that particular listener, is that if he's trying to do acquisition through the public sector usually only has the dogs. If he wants to do acquisition in order to do development, I would urge that listener to begin to develop a relationship with area banks who hold those mortgages.
Okay.
In order to do acquisition and find out from them, what is the process? What do I need to do? How can we make this work?
Okay, I have another question here from Cortez Elliott on Facebook Live. Are there any success stories of families obtaining the deeds to properties, or does the CLT retain the deed?
The CLT retains the property because it's community-controlled property.
Okay.
But here's what happens. That family can have that land for up to 300 years.
Oh, wow.
What typically happens is, so that Cortez will know, is that families, as they move along, earning more money, having more income as a result of investments, they usually sell that house, and then they go and buy their house on market so that they have the full ownership of the property. And that's where deed control comes into place. I hope I was clear.
Right.
A community land trust home, while it's top shelf, it really is meant as the first step towards home ownership. It's kind of like back in my day, Dr. K, because I'm a little old lady. Back in my day, we had starter houses, and then we flipped the houses in order to get into the tract mansions. So the community land trust provides people an opportunity who otherwise would be renting, an opportunity to own a home, continue to earn income, and then move on with their equity to their next house.
Well, then let me ask you this, because as people are kind of looking at these programs, how similar is this? And this is, I'm going to wrap it up. I know I just have a couple more questions. This is it. How similar is this to things like the teacher next door program or the police officer next door? Is it similar to that in terms of, you know, coming into these partnerships?
What it is that those programs provide a subsidy that we then can stack and allow that person to purchase the home.
Okay.
So that's what's key about this, the ability to stack subsidies in order to purchase the home at a rate lower than the market rate.
Okay, so my last two questions. The first one is from France, Jamaica. She said, how does the CLT, retaining the property, affect the homeowner in applying for the homeowner's property tax credits?
I can answer that one. They still are able to get the first time home buyer tax credit. It doesn't affect it at all. We have a special arrangement with the state in recording the property and the deeds to ensure that they're able to get the lowest rate possible as a Maryland resident and homeowner, if that's their first home.
Okay. And then my last question, and I'd like both of you to answer it. But Rod Barbershop, on Facebook Live says, look, how does this help us at all? Like, he's saying he doesn't think this information helps us at all. Why is this helpful and important information to know?
Oh, there's several reasons. So let me go for it. The first one is, you want to change the wealth trajectory for our community. The more money our community has, the more it can spend with small businesses. That's number one. We also know, number two, the quality of life changes. When our communities have at least 51% home ownership, all of the ills, all of the threats, public safety threats, health threats, educatory threats, diminish. So the reason why a land trust or shared equity model, and by the way, let me just share this, community land trusts are also used to provide for businesses, where businesses share in that particular building and pay less of a rent than they normally would pay on market, although it's still quality. It also helps with land in terms of agriculture, solar farms, and so on and so forth. The point is, the community owns the land and therefore dictates what's in its best interest. And I thank that brother for his question.
All right now.
And can I add one more thing to that?
Yes.
If we, like, I'm going to say the Smith family we work with, they were paying over $1,100 a month in rent for substandard, and it was substandard that they were getting for their housing that they were renting, meaning that it wasn't up to code, some of the things that were in their house. We were able to go with them and work to get a house that they could purchase that was similar to the house but had all new appliances, all new HVAC and systems in the house, and they're paying close to $600 a month. So we cut their payment in half. So that freed up over $600 a month for that family and kept it under 30% of their total household income, to be able to have more money available to go do other things and enjoy life and continue to build as well as build wealth. So we're able to go in and maximize and limit the amount of the housing payment is under 30% of the household income, as well as give a house that is for on the market that has all new systems and all new appliances.
And, Garrick, I want to come back to you, and this is indeed my last question, but Refresh Jamaica just had a follow-up when she was asking about the homeowner's property tax credits, that you were speaking of a different credit. The credit that she's talking about is the one you apply for yearly that then goes towards paying the property tax. Are they able to tap into that one?
Yeah, there's no limit in what on eligibility of any other program, so we don't overgo any other program. We allow them to, families can use any program that exists in the city, in the county, or the state. They're still eligible for those. So it does not prohibit them from being able to apply or be able to obtain those credits from other programs.
Okay, is there a website for Share Baltimore Incorporated that people can go to, Ms. Jones-Dorsey, to be able to get the information?
I would direct them to NEHI's website. Garrick, if you could provide that. Share Baltimore is sharing with NEHI.
Okay.
And so if Garrick can provide the website information, we'll be happy to answer their questions. And Dr. K, one other thing that I do want to say before I relinquish, and that is, Baltimore, you've got to participate in that Affordable Housing Trust Commission that was created by community. It's only been in existence 2 years. And its responsibility is to develop new strategies, programs to address the myriad of housing questions and concerns the community has.
So then, is there a website, Garrick? And also a phone number, because not everyone has a computer, just so we can make sure that people
Absolutely.
Can get the information.
So the website is www.nehihomes, so N-E-H-I, homes, H-O-M-E-S. .org. The phone number is an 800 number, and that's 1-800-726-9850. That number is 1-800-726-9850.
Thank you so much. We appreciate both of you for your time. And hopefully this information will help people as they're planning out their next steps. definitely in terms of home ownership and in terms of building your generational wealth. Do people have to be at least 21? I'm thinking that this is for people 21 years of age and older, or does it matter how old you are?
The age is dependent upon your ability to enter into contract in Maryland.
Okay. All right. Well, that takes care of that. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Dr. K. We look forward to coming back again to give the community a progress report. We expect, Share Baltimore expects to, at this time next year, have done 200 homes.
Oh, we look forward to having you back. We appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, folks. So that was just a little bit of information that we hope will help. Deborah Vaughn, they said that the age limit is based upon the ability to enter into contracts here in Maryland. Go to the website, www.nehihomes.org. That's www.nehi, because Karen is asking for Nehi Homes, Karen, N-E-H-I Homes, H-O-M-E-S, nehihomes.org. Please go on and see if that could be of some assistance to you. I want to share a story with you now from Rush Limbaugh. Now, if you have followed his career, you know that he is very conservative. Donald Trump just put a medal around his shoulders. He's also struggling with cancer. And Rush Limbaugh has been someone who has said very racist and sexist comments over the years. Think about the comments he made about the women's basketball team, talking about them. He has had a very interesting relationship with the black community. Well, Rush Limbaugh, and I'm just going to those notes now. Rush Limbaugh recently, in dealing with his listeners, the listeners wanted to know about where we go from here. And they were asking him, with this recent election, given the fact that Donald Trump did not win, even though his people, his supporters, the Trumpicans, 74 million of them, still believe that he did, that they are concerned about how we go forward. I want to have this conversation in the last 15 minutes because I want to see what you think about this. Let me quote what Rush Limbaugh said. He said, are we ever going to be able to win without taking back some of the cities? Blue cities like New York, Philadelphia, Detroit, Milwaukee, Oakland, California, San Francisco. He said, look, we won election after election without winning these cities or the states they're in. The question that we're trying to answer is, can we win the culture? Can we dominate the culture? He's talking about Trumpicans. Can they win the culture? And can they dominate the culture? Rush Limbaugh is making the argument that this country is moving toward secession, where this country is going to split. He said, I see more and more people asking, what in the world do we have in common with the people who live in, say, New York? What is there that makes us believe that there's enough of us there to even have a chance of winning New York? Rush Limbaugh said, America is trending and heading toward secession. That right now, the things that divide those who voted for Joe Biden and those who voted for Donald Trump, the issues that divide us are so great that they are insurmountable, that we will not be able to get through them, that the only answer at this point is to become two nations. That's it. Looking to become two countries is the only way that we can move forward. Well, there are things happening. There's a white man who just pulled an electric chainsaw on a woman. He said his house had been robbed by black people. And so he said she was guilty just because she's black. There's a white North Carolina man who was accused of using the N-word, punched a woman and a child over Black Lives Matter and Breonna Taylor signs. that the incidences around race have become more prominent and more prevalent during the Trump administration, starting under Barack Obama with Black Lives Matter. It has continued to grow. That Rush Limbaugh, and I'm not sure if I disagree with him, says that the only way that we can move forward is to actually become two countries. Secession, where 74 million folks hand over to Trump land. I don't know where they're going to go. And the rest of us live in Joe Biden's America. What do you think about that? Now, when I say Joe Biden's America, it means that when I'm saying Joe Biden would be king, it's the people that supported Joe Biden, who seem to believe that presidents should have limits, who seem to believe that people of color belong at the table, who seem to believe that America is becoming more diverse. There is an active browning happening in this country. We see it in the census. By 2040, the largest group in this country will be Hispanic Americans. For the first time in 2040, white people will not be in the majority. For the first time in the history of this country. If you want to know why it looks like they're setting up an apartheid system, it's because they don't have the numbers. If you want to know why they're going against abortion, because they don't have the numbers. By 2040, it is very clear that whites will be in the majority. We have Dwayne on the phone from Baltimore City. Dwayne, how are you?
Just happy to be here, Dr. K. Just happy to be here.
Happy to have you. So what do you think? Secession is the answer here?
Secession is the answer. It is not the answer for everybody, but it is the answer for some. It's a, you know, it's pretty ironic, you know, and I said this on Faraji a month or so back when we were discussing a topic like this. You know, well, let me just say this. We as black people, we've always seen white people move the goalposts. Is that not correct?
Yes, there's always a feeling that success changes.
Yes, they have to move the goalposts.
Right.
Okay, so since they can't totally dominate, you know, from a political standpoint, okay, and dominate everything and everybody, then the goalpost now is, well, we just need our own country, because if we can't control everything, then we just need our own country. Now, a few years back, it was, oh, you're not American, you're not, you know, those are anti-American ideas, you don't love your country. Well, what that really meant, you know, for some of them, for the 71 million, is, well, if we can't control everything, we can't dominate everything, then we want to take our toys and go home.
Okay. You know, I hear what you're saying.
It doesn't get any more colorful than that. At the end of the day, if they can't rule totally, they don't want to play. They don't want to play America no more, because they can't control everything anymore. That's 71 million. Now, the other 70 million on our side of the berm, they down. But the other 70 million, if they can control everything, if they can't dominate everything, if they can't basically tell everybody else what to do, they don't want to play.
All right. Thank you so much, Dwayne. Michelle's on the phone. Michelle, how are you? What do you think? Secession is the answer for what we're doing right now?
Well, of course, I don't believe that secession is the answer. However, I just want to point out that, you know, this is what they've been building up to for years. The nationalists, the white nationalists and the KKK, ever since the civil rights movement was enacted, they have, or even prior, you know, before then, but the propaganda to continue to mobilize those who think like them is that by a certain time, the country would no longer be white. So they have consistently, they've worked underground for a very long time to get to a time such as this, where they had someone who was blatantly their own in power, right? So because even having their own in power, because we know that Donald Trump was raised as a racist. His father was in the KKK. He was raised as a child to hate black and brown children. The man studied Hitler, okay? So now that the country had its own, they had their own in office, that was supposed to be their Elysium. But because there are many of us who still don't have adopted that ideology, of course the only ultimatum for them is to resort to, well, it's time for us to have our own. That's
okay.
They want to have their own. Have your own. Bye.
But do you think that the two countries can actually exist alongside each other? I mean, when you think about succession, the last time we tried succession, it led to a civil war and 600,000 people getting killed.
Exactly. So when he says succession, what he's really saying is what they've called for. They've already been talking about civil war. That's what they've been working on.
Right.
We've watched this president call for this throughout the debate. We watched this man, as he was running for president, throw up the KKK sign to let his people know it was their time, that he was their person. So we can't sit by, we can't continue to sit idly by and act stupid. I hate to use that word, but we need to open our eyes and pay attention to what's going on.
Okay, now, I got to stop you there, Michelle. I appreciate you. Folks, we're talking about the possibility of succession. Rush Limbaugh said his folks, his followers, his acolytes, you know, are the only way that we can move forward is we're going to have to secede from the Union, have our own country. The last time we tried this, now, look at this, y'all, because maybe there's a connection. If you go back, the last time there was some secession on the table, it was from states that wanted to continue to own and sell and breed black bodies. It was the South. We would rather be our own country than let black folks be free. We would rather go to war than let black folks have agency. We would rather shoot and kill our own brothers rather than let black people be able to walk and get married and have their own lives and raise their children and stand up tall. We'd rather die than have that happen. And we went to war. 600,000 plus people got killed over that. So when Rush Limbaugh put succession back on the table, have you noticed that he's talking about the Trumpicans succeeding? And we know what are big issues on the table around race, around immigration. Come on, y'all. I see some parallels here. We have Shonda on the phone. Shonda, how are you? Then I'll go to Ayanna.
Oh, I'm well, Dr. K. I tell you what, this ideal is not new. Malcolm talked about it when he, and then also Minister Farrakhan, right? Like,
right.
He says, like, no, let us, you know, let us separate ourselves. And he said, I'm not talking about give us land like you did the Indians in the middle of nowhere where you can't grow. You know, give us the lands that we settle, like Virginia and D.C.,
right,
all up and down this
give
East Coast.
Give us some good land.
And West Coast, exactly. So, but when they said, oh, they're radical, they're looked at as ravenous dogs. But Rush Limbaugh presents the idea, and then so now all of them want to line up, right, and get right behind it and like hip, hip, hooray. So it's just the white supremacy that's just further propagated just through the annals of time for America.
We're back at the place again. Back at this moment again. Let me see if I can get Ayanna in here. Thank you so much,
all
Shonda.
Right. Sure, Dr. Kay.
Yes. Ayanna, how are you? Let me get you in here before we go.
Hi, Dr. Kay.
Hey.
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth. I literally, when you brought up the entire topic, I was like, okay, the Civil War again, and we know how well that went.
Come on.
You know what I mean? Like, are you serious? But it's just really sad because the entire thing is completely a farce. Race, all of that. Like, I mean, it's just, and what the saddest part for me is I really feel bad for our white sisters and brothers that are in the poor, you know what I'm saying, poor, basically.
Yeah.
And they cannot understand that you are being completely hoaxed. You're being made to feel that you're a part of this 1%, that they really care about you. They don't give a crap about you, sweetie. Not at all. Okay? And if you think that you're going to succeed and then be up on top of a hill, you're not, baby, at all.
Mm-mm.
You need to join with your brown brothers and sisters and your black brothers and sisters and come, because really, that's the whole thing. It's about money.
It's about money. But you know what's interesting, Ayanna? Isn't this exactly where we were before? With this notion of whites aligning and thinking that I might be someone who has no land, but I'm going to align with the landowner as if my interests are going to be met. That's how so many groups became honorary whites. We need to talk about that, the history of whiteness in this country. Why don't we put that on the agenda for tomorrow, Justina? Let's talk about the history of whiteness. Nell Painter wrote a book about it, and we can talk about it tomorrow. Since we're always talking about the history of blackness, let's do the history of whiteness. And today with Dr. K, I'm Dr. K. Wise Wyatt. Meet me back here tomorrow at 3 p.m. You know, class is going to be in session. Have a great day.